All right, time once again, the Shane Christopher Neal podcast show right here on MusicLifeMagazine.net. Today's guest, real excited, 35 years rocking the bass guitar with some of Canada's best and biggest rock stars. Right now, you want to know who it is. I know you want to know. Johnny D's going to tell you. That's right, Robert Laidlaw in all his glory from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. He started out with Lee Aaron. He got his big break with Kim Mitchell. He's played with Honeymoon Suite. You hear him live right now playing I Feel It Again. Make sure you buy that song on iTunes. Platinum Blonde, managed the band, toured with the band, lover boy. He's a Juno-nominated songwriter. He's one of my good friends, and I'm so excited to talk to him today. Coming up next, stick around. Robert Laidlaw. Oh, yeah.
This is the Shane Christopher Neal Podcast. As co-host of BS Live Rocks on your TV and co-founder of BS Live Rocks Entertainment Group, Shane has interviewed artists from Whitesnake, Guns N' Roses, Jason Aldean Band, and Canadian rock stars from Honeymoon Suite to Lee Aaron, Haywire, and Platinum Blonde. Shane is a drummer, podcaster, television, radio, and event host. This podcast is sponsored by MusicLifeMagazine.net. Now let's get talking. Here's your host, Shane Christopher Neal.
All right, we're ready to rock and roll with one of the biggest rock stars I know, Robert Laidlaw. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you so much, Shane. I'm looking forward to it.
So we met a few years back and we've been in conversation many times. You've been on the TV show and played the Niagara Music Awards and you're a busy guy. And I got to know a little bit about your past. And part of that past was playing. We just heard Honeymoon Suite live at the Gods. And that was where? Somewhere in England or something, right?
Yes, it was. It was in Manchester, I believe. So, and we did a live DVD of that show as well.
That's right. And in fact, I own the DVD. And then recently I bought the album on iTunes because you need to buy all your music, people out there, buy all your music. And I bought it on iTunes. And I loved when Johnny D said, I want to welcome on the bass guitar Robert Laidlaw. So I thought it was a great intro. But before we talk about Honeymoon Suite, let's go back to the beginning. You got your start really, would you say, with Lee Aaron when you were kind of on your way up into the industry?
Well, actually, no, literally 30 years ago, and, you know, I know it's dating me, but I was in a band called New Regime, and we had a major record deal with RCA Records, and that was my first, my very first gig, actually, that got me into the public eye was a fellow named Johnny Loveson, and that was, like, I think 86, and he had a record deal. I was playing in his band as a sideman, and we ended up doing some really cool gigs. We opened for Stevie Ray Vaughan across Canada. We opened for just a lot of big shows because at the time he had a big push with A&M Records. But the best part of that thing is that it really showcased my bass playing, which is what I originally was a guitar player, but became to have a career as a professional bass player with, as you mentioned, sort of all virtually I've touched down with, I'd say, every Canadian rock star for sure and some American ones. But yeah, so it started then. And then actually at which point Mark Holmes from Platinum Blonde way back then was courting me to be in Platinum Blonde at the time because they were going from three-piece to a four-piece. But at the same time, I was also being approached by this band New Regime that had just signed their record deal. And at the time, Platinum Blonde was always already quite well on their way. New Regime was really, I mean, I think 19 at the time, and they literally had offered me something that I had wanted to always pursue, and that was songwriting. So I passed on Platinum Blonde, which in hindsight is, you know, could have been, you know, the wrong decision, but you never know what the outcome of any decision will be. And I went with New Regime, and we did a record and did some great tours too. But We were signed to RCA, and that year that our record came out, BMG bought RCA out, and they came over to Canada and looked at all the bands that were that had spent a great deal of money and weren't making the money back, and they dropped us. They dropped a band called Parachute Club, and they dropped another band called the Pucca Orchestra at the time, all in one foul swoop. So BMG was a company from Germany when we nicknamed them the Big Mean Germans. So
I love
They came over and effectively killed our career. No, but anyway, that, then from that moment on, what that band and that gig had given me was it had given me profile on the Canadian stages. So people knew knew of my playing and you know, and also, you know, at the time sort of a stylish look. And so they started projects that required sidemen started to call me, and I started accepting gigs. I mean, in that first year that New Regime sort of basically broke up, I worked with Images in Vogue, Strange Advance, who else at that time? Oh, a band called II, you know, which, you know, I think they had one record maybe. But anyway, and then Lee Aaron, in 89, she put out her biggest record for her, Body Rock. And I guess it was, although, no, you know what, I was all along the way, I was playing in original bands too, because I was a songwriter. And I was playing in an original band called Winter Rose. And Winter Rose ended up having, we had two singers, both of which were springboards to much bigger gigs. Our first singer was Sebastian Bach, who went on to Skid Row. And then our second singer was James LaBrie, who went on to Dream Theater and to this day is still... So it was, we were opening for Lee Aaron at the down at the Ontario Place, you know, the forum down there. And Karen saw me playing with Winter Rose. And at the time, they were making a bass switch. So literally after that show, Karen and John, her partner, approached me and they said, "Look, we'd be interested in hiring you to do some shows with Lee Aaron Band." And so I accepted. And that was probably the last few months of the Body Rock tour. And at the end of that tour, they literally, Karen and John came up to me and said, "Look, we're going to be taking a month or two off to finish the writing for the next follow-up record, and we'd like you to play on it." And then that sort of started a relationship. I've worked with her for a year and a half, and and from there I was literally on the road with Karen when a good friend of mine called me and said Kim Mitchell is auditioning bass players for his upcoming tour. He had just finished his most successful record, Rockland, at the time. And I flew home from Halifax on one of Karen's tours and had 2 days to learn a bunch of Kim Mitchell songs. Went into an audition, was flying out west 2 days later, and I got a call from Kim asking me if I'd like to come on board. So I literally finished up 2 weeks with Karen and right into rehearsals with Kim when I got back. And so on and so forth. From that, I did, you know, Lana Miles for 3 years. After that, I was sort of winding down 2 years with Kim, and again, got it. By that point, though, after I did the Kim Mitchell gig, I didn't have to do auditions anymore.
Right, because everybody knew, you had mentioned that to me before, that was your kind of big break, is that everyone said, "Oh, it's that guy who plays with Kim Mitchell. We don't need to have him come and rehearse." It's funny. I love how you you talk about Karen. And for people who don't know, Karen Greening is actually Lee Aaron's real name. So it's always interesting that you call it. Did you call her by Karen, I guess, when you were playing with her, right?
Always. Yeah. No, I see her, you know, on the Canadian scene to this day. And, I call it Karen.
Is that where you started your relationship with Randy Cook as well? Because you and Randy became good friends, and Randy was a drummer.
No, Randy and I go so far back. We go back to when the first gig that I really was doing playing bass when I was 19, that guy Johnny Loveson. He and I, when I met Randy, it was so funny. We were thrown into the fire together on the Johnny Loveson gig. And and we had an immediate connection as a rhythm section, and also as personalities too. I mean, it was just, and to this day, it's a lifelong. We consider each other brothers for sure. I mean, we're in touch all the time, and I'm actually going to be making quite a few trips down to LA this year, specifically to work with Randy and stuff.
And but, of course, you're going to get Randy to be on this show, right?
That's right. Sure, in a heartbeat, my friend, I could arrange that.
And I met Randy. He was playing at the time. Actually, as we go through the years that you're playing here, Randy Cook. I met him when he played a few gigs with Honeymoon Suite in Toronto at I can't even remember the bar. It sounds like a steakhouse.
Okay.
Anyway, well, it wasn't
a
steakhouse. Montana, yeah. It was some place that and it's the first time I met Randy, and he was also playing with Rick Emmett, right? I think.
That's right.
And did you play with Rick Emmett as well?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Shane, there's virtually, and I'm not bragging. It's just over the years I've literally done tours with. You could probably name any sort of major Canadian artist, and there, as I say, once I had done the Kim gig, and Kim was sort of like the Frank Zappa of Canada, right? So if you got into his band, you were perceived as at the top of your game on your instrument. So as I say, after I got that gig, there was no longer any need for me to audition for tours. People would just call me and just say, are you available, kind of thing.
That was a
very pivotal moment for me playing with Kim.
So,
and I'm still good friends with him today.
So you didn't play with Lee that long then, just at the end of the year?
A year and change, yep.
Okay, well, and that's not that long in the big picture. And did you...
It isn't, but when you look in terms of, like, I played with Kim for 2.5 years, and I would have kept... Actually, no, I wouldn't have kept going, because Peter, the guy that normally plays with Kim and has for all these years, is Peter Ferdinand. The reason why he left Kim for that couple of years was he went on the road with Tom Cochrane on the Mad Mad World Tour, which was Tom's biggest record. And actually, it was kind of fun. We did two tours that summer. It was a Kim Mitchell, Tom Cochrane co-bill. And we were doing big festivals and arenas and stuff. And, we were all hanging out, and I got to hang out with Peter. And Peter, of course, is that high voice and all of Kim's stuff, that very, identifiable, almost as identifiable as Kim's voice. So I had to cover all his stuff. So it was a lot of fun during that period, but that's why Peter wasn't with Kim for those few years. But as Kim's thing was winding down, I got a call from Alana Miles's people, and she was embarking on her follow-up record from her big record, which was a global smash, and I toured the world with her, so that was a lot of fun.
So we've covered a few of these people. We haven't with Honeymoon Suite. Now, you joined them when?
I started, and it was sort of a weird thing, because they actually had their Honeymoon Suite is essentially Johnny and Dermot,
right?
Derry, they never stopped from the day. I mean, they do now have the original bass player and drummer with them, and they have, I think, for the last 7 or 8 years. But Johnny and Dermot, all through the 80s, going into the 90s, they never stopped. The other guys sort of went on and did different things. But what essentially Dermot and Johnny did was they hired a rhythm section and a keyboard player, right? And I at the time, it was 1999, and I was a co-owner of a recording studio. So I had shifted my, I'd literally spent 7 years on the road, tour after tour after tour, and I was burnt. So when I came off the road, I invested money in gear with an engineer fellow that I had met along the way. And I had run it, the drummer in Honeymoon Suite at the time was a good friend. And he said, Robbie, you should, John and Dermot are looking to do a new record. You should talk to them. So I talked to them. We did a 3-song demo. At the time, they didn't have a record deal. So we did a 3-song demo, and we used the drummer. But because I'm a bass player, and we were in the studio, Johnny and Derry just said, well, Rob, why don't you just throw down the bass? It's just the demos to get interest. We got interest. And as we were about to go and delve into more writing and do the record, they got called to do this 3-week tour out west. And at the time, Johnny just said, "Well, Rob, why don't you just learn the set and come on the road with us, right?" And it was really that laid back. It wasn't any big like, "Hey, you know, you're going to be the bass player in Honeymoon Suite." It's like, just do this tour, and then we'll get back to the business of making the record. And we did the tour. We went and spent about 2 months doing the record. And then during that period, it just turned, you know, just sort of morphed into me. During the 2 months, we did a few shows. It just became logical for me to. So I unfortunately ended up sort of stealing the bass player's gig. But John and Derry, at that point, we were so engrossed in getting the record done that it wasn't a huge...
Now, this was for Lemon Tongue, is that right?
Lemon Tongue, correct.
Yeah, and then did you co-produce that? Or
I did.
Yeah, okay.
I co-produced it and I co-wrote some songs on it. And yeah, that started a very positive writing relationship with Johnny D, the singer from Honeymoon
Suite. Right. And Randy Cook played drums on the record.
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I essentially, and Randy's done this too, we have, whenever we possibly could, we would use each other, you know, pull one another into play, because from very early on, as I say, from the very first gig we did together back in the mid-80s, there was just this very organic connection musically, and the energy was palpable. I mean, we played on, oh my God, in the late 80s, early 90s, at least 100 CDs, and some CDs, and it's called ghosting. When you ghost on CDs,
right,
you're literally listed as additional musicians. So the band, like, I'm talking like a lot of bands, band called Big House, a band called, yep, Gypsy Rose, a band called, you know, tons of bands that had deals. And I played on some Big Sugar records in the early days, and you know, just stuff that, again, you weren't part of the band, but you were good and proficient, and so played on a Helix. Randy and I did a Helix record. So, you know, it's any time that I could work with him, I always called him, and it was a vice versa thing there too. So
when you played go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, when you played live at the Gods, though, it was Brent Carrigan, I think, that was playing with Honeymoon Suite.
Brent Carrigan,
Brent.
That lineup was Peter Nunn, who's with them today,
yeah,
and Brent Carrigan on drums, yeah.
And so you still work with Johnny D, right, as he's got a couple of solo albums out, or he's got one out and he's working on...
I produced and co-wrote his first and only solo CD back in 2004, and then about a year ago we met and started hacking away at this follow-up one. But, I mean, again, the boys, last year, Honeymoon Suite probably had one of their busiest years in, I don't know, 10, 15 years, so... they did I saw the boys, they played out in Georgetown right before Christmas, and I went out and hung out with them. I hadn't seen them in a while, so it was good.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No,
Let's go into Platinum Blonde, because you mentioned them at the beginning. You didn't join them, but then eventually you did.
Mark, from that way back then, when, in 85, I think it was, Mark and I had become, to be honest with you, he used to come and check me out because I got a name around town way back then as a sort of the up and coming hot bass player. So he would actually come and see me play, and that's what prompted him to ask me to join the band at the time, and then. When Platinum Blonde broke up proper in 92 or 3, he put together a new project called The Breed, and Randy and I were the rhythm section, as a matter of fact. We did we did a record with Mark, and I don't think it actually saw the light of day commercially, but we did a handful of good shows. We opened for... Paul Rogers from Bad Company. We were open for The Cult. We did a bunch of shows, but at the same time, I was transitioning out of Karen's band into Kim's band, so I couldn't make a commitment to do more touring with Mark at the time. But all through the, you know, always touch base. And then, you know, in the I think 2004, we Honeymoon Suite, and Mark had fired Platinum Blonde up, but he called it TB2K or something like that, right? Because Sergio wasn't in the band.
Right, yeah.
And Honeymoon Suite and PB2K did a cross Canada tour, which was just a sellout. We literally did extremely well, those two bands together. And so, you know, I hung out with Mark then. And then probably, you mentioned that place, Montana. I was actually the musical director at that club. So when you saw Randy play there, I would have been playing there as well. But anyway, I had hired Mark to do some corporate things. And then sort of out of the blue, well, Kenny McLean passed in 2008, I believe. And the night Kenny died, he was releasing a CD at the Mod Club, which was a club that Mark was a part owner of downtown Toronto. And they announced an official Platinum Blonde reunion with the original four guys. And that night, literally, Kenny went home and had a massive heart attack and a tragedy. And anyway, in the end of 2008, so Kenny would have died, I think, in, I don't know, the fall of that year. And then in around November, I got a call out of the blue from Mark, and he said they were being inducted into the Hall of Fame. And would I be able to put together a skeleton band with Sergio, the original drummer, Chris, and a keyboard player, and myself, and musical direct the whole thing? And for the induction ceremony, I said, absolutely, I could do that for you. So we did the gig, and the agents, that was, I think, in February of 2009, and the agents were just salivating, right? They just said, you know, this is great. The original, you know, or the most of the original guys, you know, but Sergio and Mark specifically, they just basically said, you're leaving a whole lot of money on the table. Would you like to fire it up and everyone make some money? And Mark said, absolutely. Sergio said, absolutely. Chris, the drummer, unfortunately, has tinnitus, and he wasn't able to do it. But so at which point I went out, Mark, you know, kept the musical director hat on me, and I went out and hired a drummer and a keyboard player. And we, that first year, I think we probably did 50 dates, maybe.
So, and you hired Dan Todd, who's still there.
Yes, I hired Dan. He wasn't the first drummer I hired, but and the first drummer I hired was a fellow that I had worked with in Images and Vogue all those years ago. But he had a phobia for flying, so the very first summer it became evident that...
I remember you telling me this story, too, yeah.
Yeah, it wouldn't work out. So, but yeah, and then I hired Dan, yeah, because interestingly, I had played in a trio from 2005 to basically Kenny's death. With Dan Todd. It was me, Kenny McLean, and Dan Todd. We had, it was just a weekend warrior kind of trio band, right? But it was a good little band, yeah.
And while we're talking about Platinum Blonde, because you had been candid to talk about your substance abuse in the past and how now you are sober, and it was a moment that you were playing with Platinum Blonde, and it was in Niagara, right, that kind of changed your life to the way it is now, correct?
I'm an alcoholic and I've been sober now coming on 3 years.
Right.
We were doing a big festival and I was, all stuff I'm not proud of, but, I was having seizures and, we were playing the Grape and Wine Festival and actually Mark held me through that specific seizure. It's terrible to talk about multiple seizures, but anyway, I was in the hospital, you know, they do a CAT scan on you when you have a seizure and the doctor wasn't going to let me out. And I said, look, I got to get back to this gig. There's 10,000 people waiting there. So, that was the beginning of, the beginning of my, basically a wake up call for me, right? You know, alcoholics call it hitting rock bottom. And that was sort of my rock bottom.
And that's an important story because it shows you that because there's a lot of people who do deal with that once you do deal with it and you move on, there's some good stuff on the other side of that and probably better stuff now that you can enjoy it. Right.
So 100%. Yeah, no, I mean, I can't even, and I, of course I'm not going to go into the details of it, but it's just the clarity and the, I mean, I love music again, and I had gotten to a point where I really, I didn't like playing. I didn't like songwriting. And these were all the things that went, you know, early in my career, it was the passion for it. And yeah, so I mean, yeah, substance abuse is an awful thing. Yeah.
So you also have touched or crossed paths sort of with Gord Depp, right, from the Spoons. Like, you've never played in the band, but you do play with Gord. I know, because he's got the Spoons going right now.
Oh, very interesting you mention that. I just hired Gordy for a corporate gig we're doing up in Collingwood, March 10th, as a matter of fact.
Well, interestingly enough, I just emailed him all day today about an interview I'm trying to do with him in February when he's in St. Catharines.
Nice.
That's why I kind of was top of mind. I was like, that's right. You play with him.
Yeah, no, I'm doing a corporate gig with him in February too. Yeah, I've played on and off again with Gordy, God, for 15 years now. But specifically for the corporate gigs that I book, and this one's called Voices of the 80s, and I've hired Gordy and a guy named Gary Brown, who, remember a band called The Tenants?
Yes, I do. Yep.
Yeah, the singer from The Tenants. So those two are going to be the two artists that we cover. So we end up doing like all the Spoons hits. And then I think there's, you know, sort of three or four Tenants hits and round out the night with my backing band. So essentially what I do is I hire the backing band and we, in Gordy's case, you know, we do Romantic Traffic, Tell No Lies, Nova Heart, Arias and Symphony, all the Spoons hits. So it's a really cool experience for the audience, because it's just the best of set, right?
Yeah.
And,
you mentioned, okay, and this has nothing to do with you, but Arias and Symphonies. So that's what the song's called, right? Arias and Symphonies.
Yeah.
So I purchased that song that he performed in 1982 or 84 in Toronto at a club. And he says, we're going to play a song called Arias and Symphonies. And when he sings the damn song, he sings Arias and or something. And I'm thinking, that's kind of weird. And that's why I want to ask him why he did that. Because he introduced the song properly, but when he sings it, he pronounces the first word differently. Anyway.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to send it to you or a piece of it, because it's kind of funny just being a fan of the Spoons. And I was like, it's Arias and Symphonies. And when he sings it, I think he sings Arias or Arias. And it's just totally, totally different.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Hey, Gordy's a great guy, and we continue to work together a lot. Yeah.
So let's talk some things a little more current, and I appreciate you going and giving us a recap of everything, because you've touched basically everybody I know in Canadian music, and I'm sure the listeners that listen to this on Music Life Magazine feel the same way. I mean, you've played with some of the best and done some of the neatest things. What about your role right now as a manager with Barb Doran? And you've been doing that for a little while, and we've had you down in Niagara. So what's that all about?
Yeah, well, it's coming on a year that I've been working with this new up-and-coming country folk artist called Barbara Lynn Doran. And she's got a lot of very exciting things coming up this year. But the last year specifically, it was literally a year ago right now. She had hired me originally. I've been working with Barb. And again, when I talked earlier about ghosting on records, there's some major records that I've played on, but there's also probably hundreds of independent records that I've played on over the years. Either produced, co-produced, or just producers have hired me to be the bass player on the records. And this was the case with Barb. She started recording and writing and making records in 2009, and the producer hired me to play on the record. It was sort of, he'd tack it on, you know, the end of another session I'd be doing. He'd say, hey, Rob, just throw down on this country record I'm doing. And, you know, we'd spend a couple hours, and I'd play the bass on it. And then you know, it sort of go away, and that happened again in 2013 and then 2015. So she's got three CDs, and I'd never met her. Yeah, which isn't uncommon when you do a lot of session stuff, right? So I've played on all her records, but I'd never met her. And last December, out of the blue, she called me and said, hi, I'm actually going to go out and promote my music, and you've come very highly recommended to be the musical director and put together the band and all that stuff, sort of be the ringleader, as it were. And that's she came over to my house, we had a coffee, and and she played me some of her records, and I don't recall playing on any of them, but I certainly recognize my bass playing. And that was the beginning of the relationship that continues to this day. We had a very successful 2017, and 2018, we're actually going to Vietnam in April, and all kinds of very cool things are happening.
That is amazing.
So, my role has transitioned into so much more than just a musical director. I'm in essence managing her at this point. And again, just because at this stage of the game, the more than anything, just because of my involvement in the industry all these years, I have personal and professional contacts, and actually with all the big agencies like Feldman and the agency group. There are people at all those agencies that will actually take my call, return my call. And so I sort of have fallen into this role just because I can do it, not because I'm technically a manager. It's just that all the functions of a manager, I'm completely capable of accommodating. So I'm sort of her utility guy at this point. So yeah, but it's
well, and you play guitar
great.
With her and you sing.
I do. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
So, and yeah. You co-write with her too now or no? Or
I've just started, but interestingly, in sobriety, I haven't been writing all that much. I've been busy getting back into the love and the passion of performing and playing. But I have started writing in the last 6 months. Yeah, again. So yeah.
Do you have a website or no? You don't, do you?
I used to, and I do not right now. I still have my Facebook Robert Laidlaw producer page, and it's still got me linked with the Platinum Blonde, because I was with Platinum Blonde for 5 years, right? And I co-produced their current CD that's out right now as well. And so I, you know what, that's just sheer laziness, but I mean, all the artists that I work with have sites and all that.
Now, one other question, last one. Besides your involvement with Barb this year, do you foresee you playing with any of the other larger Canadian acts in 2018?
Absolutely. Well, as a matter of fact, this summer I was on the road with the band called Toronto. I don't know. If
oh,
you
that's right.
That.
Yeah, you're of course with Gary Borden. Yeah. Well, he's a Phil. Yeah, he's a guy
Gary
like you, a hired gun, right?
That's right. Exactly. And Gary, what a great fella he is. Holy crap! He and I. The very first show we did in, I can't even remember, I think it was up North Bay area. And, we just immediately fast friends. We went out to dinner and had a great hang, and, we ended up doing a bunch of shows and there's more shows coming up. So yeah, I boy, there was one festival show that was great. It was out in, Kelowna, BC, and it was a 2-day, classic rock fest, and there were 12 bands and 8 of them I'd played in. It was classic. It was like Kim, Rick Emmett, Platinum Blonde, Honeymoon Suite, Sass, Rough Trade, Helix was on it. So I mean, literally it was classic. Yeah. Cool was that we all hung out in the hotel. And for me, it was like old home week too, right? It was great.
It's funny. I hope that Gary Borden will still take your calls, because apparently now he's friends with Rudy Sarzo. So I don't know where you're going to fit now bass player,
I could be replaced. That's right. Yeah.
Man, you're always a pleasure to talk to, and I enjoy working
Absolutely.
With you like on any level. I know you came down to do some stuff for us for the Niagara Music Awards and at the PAC Center and Mo Mondays and all that stuff. And we got to connect
Absolutely.
Again in person and have a coffee downtown
for sure.
Toronto. Maybe yourself.
Well, Barb and I are going to be down on Thursday. I know you're way out in Vegas, which is awesome. But we're playing an event for a country artist by the name of Gil Grand.
Yes, I know Gil.
And they're doing a big opening of their new company, actually, in St. Catharines. And Barb and I are going to be down. And I know Todd Brown from the Niagara Music Awards. He's going to be there at the gala as well. And yeah, so we're down there on Thursday.
On Thursday, that's the 25th. It's happening at the Warehouse. Gil Grand's playing, Brad
that's
Battle's
right.
playing, Nolan Jodes. I mean, It's funny because I was part of all the meetings, and unfortunately for work, I have to go to Vegas. Well, not unfortunately, but I'm not going to be here for the event. And right. That kind of sucks, but I've given away a number of tickets for people to go. I hope people go out and support it. And speaking of Gil and Angela, we're actually recording on the 28th when I get back, an interview for TV for Catching Waves, which is the new radio tracking company that they've created with Gil and Angela. Yep. And yeah, so it's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm interested to learn more about that. And by the way, we're starting another TV show here, which is going to be a round table of music industry experts in that. And we'll definitely get you involved in that at some time when we're going to film it. I don't know the whole details of it. It's going to be filmed maybe once a month or something here in Niagara. I don't know. I think Brock University is doing it possibly. It may be at Brock. I don't know. But I'll definitely reach out to you and have you involved 100%.
Well, sounds great, Shane. I appreciate all the support, too, and your friendship, buddy. It's been awesome. And Bobby as well, and Todd now. I mean, great musical brotherhood down there for sure, and sisterhood. But they're just very, very vital scene happening in the Niagara region for sure. It's awesome.
Awesome. Robert Laidlaw right here on MusicLifeMagazine.net. Okay.